very short time at our disposal because of many other engagements that we have, probably all of us. Let me take this opportunity to say good morning to the Deputy Minister, the DG and the officials, honourable members. This is an engagement between ourselves as the Select Committee for Education and Recreation with the Department of Basic Education to look at the performance of in matric results, but also there is a quality assurer, Omalusi, that is going to give us also their perspective and how well they've been able to perform the duty of being a quality assurer that is assigned to them, so that we get results that are credible and have got integrity, and we issue certificates that have got a currency that can be accepted in any of the other countries. So let's get started. We want to welcome you and to say that it is going to be a short meeting, as I said. We have got only 2 hours at our disposal because some of the members are participating in SONA debate, so we shall have to give due consideration for it. We are going to hand over to the Department of Basic Education to start with the presentation first. You are given only 40 minutes for them, or less, if you can be able to afford that. You just give us the critical points in your slides, or talk to your slides as you move quite briskly towards the end of your presentation. We have apologies. The apology of the minister who is attending cabinet. We've got an apology from Honorable Lamine, is processing one of her bills in her province. We've got an apology also from Honorable Stock. He's engaged in some political work in his province. Those are the secretary of the committee is on sick leave. Those are the only apologies I received.
Thank you. I wanted to register my apology of Mshodi. She's still committed somewhere in her and she's ready to meet. Thank you.
I will then hand over to the department, to the Deputy Minister, to give us the political prefacing remarks.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and esteemed members of the committee. The Chairperson, let me be outset just express our gratitude on behalf of the Ministry and the Department of Basic Education for the wonderful support and the hard work of the Select Committee in the National Council of Provinces. We also want to express our gratitude to members who have made the effort to visit schools at the opening beginning of the year, and certainly we look forward to receiving a report from yourselves in relation to issues or challenges that you might have encountered as you visited schools. Chairperson, I'm going to respect your request that we try to limit our presentation so that we allow for better opportunity for engagement between the departments, as a department as well as Umalusi. Doesn't form part of the department, they are a statutory body with whom we work, and certainly we want to endorse our gratitude to them for doing sterling work over the years, because I think we certainly have a very, very credible institution that oversees the important element of examination. And given the size and scope of the examination and the tasks that they have at hand from the time that the examinations are papers are prepared, moderated, marked, overseeing the whole process, looking at irregularities and a range of things. We do recognize that their effort is not limited to one particular area, but the entire spectrum from the beginning to the end of the examination process, and indeed we are grateful that the CEO is here today. Chair, the presentation will be done by, from the department will be done by the Director General, and indeed we're grateful that he's here, because he had to come from a very far place in order to really affirm the importance of this meeting itself, and that he will be returning shortly thereafter. The apology of the minister has been conveyed. Chair, before what we can say, and I just want to, these are very, very brief remarks, is firstly that we are satisfied and convinced that the system of education has stabilized, it is cohesive, we work as one system, notwithstanding the fact that there are nine provincial departments and that education is a concurrent competency. Second, that we can celebrate the fact that at the end of this administration, we have certainly turned the corner, we are on the rise as a system, and we basically, we can say without any reservation that we've done extremely well in terms of access, and we are making steady, substantive progress in relation to quality. Just to highlight one or two elements, and which we take comfort in, particularly with regard to the emphasis that we place not only on access but on equity, which is critical. That last year we would have noticed that our no-fee schools have produced more bachelor's passes than our fee-paying schools, that our no-fee schools have produced more distinctions than our fee-paying schools. And notwithstanding the huge difference in the context, the socio-economic conditions of those learners who are under-resourced, generally under-resourced schools with lack of amenities, who come from homes where there are social and economic challenges, they were able to demonstrate a will to succeed. And indeed, that is, in my opinion, is a huge cause for celebration. Second, that for the first time, and certainly in the past 15 years, we produced the best quality as 1 out of 2.3 learners is able to go to university, and more than 2 learners out of the 3 would be able to go to an institution of higher learning. That means that again, demonstrates the particularly weight that we've attached to quality, and learners are indeed recognizing the value of quality education and the importance of being able to acquire tertiary opportunities in the tertiary sector. The third point, Chairperson, would be in relation to the important, I think significant progress that has been made in mathematics and science. You've done extremely well in terms of improving the pass in both in mathematics and in physical science. And physical science in particular has shown a steady improvement in the past 4 years, which is something that we can indeed celebrate. Now, you probably will hear, I cannot anticipate what the CEO of Umalusi is going to say about the adjustments, but you would discover soon enough, I imagine, that the raw marks in physical science and mathematics were used. In other words, there was no upward adjustment. On the contrary, if my knowledge is correct and my memory serves me right, there was a downward adjustment in terms of mathematical literacy. In other words, rather than increasing it, they decreased the marks in mathematical literacy. So again, it shows that the system has stabilized, and that's an important element. I conclude, Chairperson, by saying that the Director General would elaborate and embellish on this particular point, that we've had 12 new subjects that we introduced, because you are aware of the vocational stream that we've introduced, and our first cohort of learners last year, except for the matric examination, doing technical mathematics, technical science, and doing the mechanical, the civil, and the electrical, and the technological engineering part of it. So that is an important achievement, given the fact that we did so incrementally, and the learners had indeed written. You would also probably hear from the CEO about the cognitive demand for mathematics and science, and how we believe it would also stabilize over time, given the fact that it's a new subject that has been introduced in the area. But with that, we celebrate the fact that we've made a huge stride in terms of inclusive education. We were able to examine our in terms of sign language, which is now part of the curriculum, and they wrote the examination, and I do believe that we can celebrate the achievement, the extraordinary achievement of our learners with disability across, you know, in this covers a range of disabilities, not only those who are deaf, but those who are partially sighted, those with physical disabilities, who have done extremely well in the context of the challenges that they face. So overall, the narrative for education as a system across all the provinces has been very encouraging. It inspires hope, and we do believe and we recognize that there are huge challenges that lie ahead. We can't pretend that we've achieved excellence. I think we've just moved away from mediocrity, but we can take heart that indeed a system which captures more than, well, approximately 95% of the learner population in the country, that is our public schools, has indeed on the rise, and with the hard work of the provincial departments and the districts and the circuit managers and all stakeholders in education, particularly teachers in the classroom, we can indeed do better year after year. So thank you very much for the opportunity, Chairperson. And as indicated to you, at about 10:45, I will have to leave in order to attend another meeting, which basically will not start without me being there. Thank you very much, Chair.
No, thank you very much, Deputy Minister, for your remarks. One would take the opportunity before you leave to actually congratulate the Department of Basic Education for the improvement in matric results. You made us very proud. It shows that there is a lot of improvement in the work that is being done in teaching and learning, even at the level of lower grades. Because the extent to which we deliver quality at the lower grades will determine the output at the level of grade 12. We really do want to say congratulations. We want to hope that next, or this cohort, the 2019 cohort, will be able to give us 85% or even more than that. We are positive about it, and it is going to happen. We have shown that you are able to do it, and you are going to keep improving from time to time. Maybe I will give an opportunity to honorable members to make remarks based on the input by the DM now that he is requesting to leave for another critical meeting at 10:45. It might just happen that somebody wants to say something before he leaves to him, because by the time we ask questions, he'll be gone. Any remarks, any questions? Satisfied. The only issue, DM, from my side that I wanted to verify before you leave, we are very excited about the fact that we are now beginning to introduce which I would call technical high schools. My question is, are our teachers trained, or do we have teachers that are adequately trained to teach in those kinds of high schools, because that is critically what we need to have in South Africa. I think that is a step towards the right direction. But my question was, do we have sufficient teachers to teach these technical subjects in those technical high schools? Thank you.
Excuse me, I beg your pardon. Thank you very much, Chair. I think you raised a very, very important issue. When we decided to introduce the vocational stream, we reflected very carefully on it. It was preceded by pilots that we introduced, and thereafter we did so incrementally. We started up with grade 10 so that the professional training and development could take place at that level. The year thereafter was grade 10 and 11, and the year thereafter it was grade 10, 11 and 12. And the reason why we did that in particular, well, there were two reasons in particular, but the one was in relation to ensuring that the amenities are available, because there's a practical dimension. We've got to refurbish our schools. We've got to ensure that the resources are there. But the more important reason is the one that you raised, to say that there has been such a long absence of this technical element within our education system that we can't be over hasty in introducing it. So we are focusing in particular. I personally attended not less than two workshops where you had educators who were competent in those areas being trained and retrained. Now, I'm not saying that we've achieved the excellence that we seek to achieve, but certainly what we've discovered is that there are people who have great skills in those areas. What we might want to do is be more innovative, particularly with regard to your technical areas. So whether it's woodwork, whether it's electrical engineering, is to see how do you utilize the practical and competencies and skills of people who are in that particular industry to be able to teach the subject in our schools. So the person might not be a qualified teacher, but he or she might have the appropriate skills in those particular areas, particularly the practical skills that are so desperately required. And that discussion has to take place. But we have certainly paid particular attention to professional development. We might want to use this opportunity also to announce that we are introducing 26 occupational subjects. That is the third stream in education. So you have your academic stream, you have your vocational stream, and now you're going to have 26 occupational subjects, which will, by the way, include spray painting and welding and fitting and turning and a range of skills, intermediate skills that our country desperately needs. But again, we are hearing what you are saying. We're being very cautious. We would love to introduce it at one go. But we're saying let's start with a huge pilot. Test it. Find out what are the requirements in order for the system itself to be able to sustain that particular broad element, and secondly to do so in an incremental way. So the intention then basically is this year would be the huge pilot. We've identified the schools across the provinces to allow this opportunity to take place. We will monitor it very, very carefully, ensure that professional development doesn't take place next year, but takes place this year already, so that when it becomes universal, you know, it's available in all provinces next year, we have the skills that have been developed. We've identified the areas, the niche areas for the various provinces, because each province might want to basically look at a particular niche. So if there's an industry that requires a particular skill, then that province would basically say, well, in the occupational bouquet that you have, 26 occupations, we would like in this particular technical school to make available these skills here. So it's not just a broad offering, but it's selected and responsive to the environment in which it's being brought. So I thought I'd raise that, but again, confirm your concern and about this matter. It's something that we would have to look at very, very closely. In fact, yesterday, one of the honorable members raised the issue of subject advisors in technical schools. So we've just started, and I said, look, it's something that has to be looked at. So we would have to be very, very careful about how we tread this path. But if you're not bold, and if you don't take the first step, you're never going to get there. Thank you very much for that.
Well, in the interest of time, let us head over to the DG. Whose apology I read, but Wahiti. That you made your way to the committee. Thank you very much. We really do appreciate your effort.
Thank you.
And we've always been present at committee meetings nonetheless. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, Mr. Fisari is going to quickly take us through the presentation. He's assured me that we're not going to take more than 40 minutes. He might help us to save a few minutes for discussions. Thank you.
Good morning, colleagues. Good morning, Chair. Thank you for the opportunity for allowing us to present the outcomes of the National Senior Certificate Examination to the Select Committee. I think DM has done an excellent job in already summarizing the entire presentation. I think also it's a pity that we don't have screens up, because DG colleagues will have to be paging like crazy just to keep up with the slides. But
let's apologize for that. This building is being renovated,
okay,
and we've got major problems, but
we have got copies in full. Okay. Yes, our aim is to present the 2018 National Senior Certificate Examination performance. You'll see on slide 2 you have the presentation outline, which is quite a substantive outline. I'm not going to go through all of it. But in short, we are reporting as DM has mentioned, probably on the best NSC results in the past 15 years. And the main points of the presentation will focus on our move towards high quality education with significant improvements in the learning outcomes, especially based on us not being scared as a country to be compared with the best international standardized tests that are measured through our international assessments, in short, measuring the performance of the system. The strategic direction of the Department of Basic Education is still fully aligned to the NDB plan, as you'll see in slide 5, with all the subcategories, NTF frameworks, and the sector plan being the key components that is driving the education system in short. We will talk about the size and shape of basic education, as well as the complexity, the massiveness, and the highly diverse system we are dealing with, which can be seen on slide 7, where we comprise of about 75 districts, which has now moved up from 70 to the additional 5 in Limpopo, 889 circuit offices, and 25,762 schools, of which 23,796 are public ordinary schools in the South African landscape. You will also see, colleagues, that the total number of learners we are covering in our education sector amounts to about 12,490 learners in the entire sector, and the bulk of these learners are to be found in our public schools. When looking at the education statistics at a glance also, you get a picture of the sector and the landscape of education, looking at the number of learners, the number of educators, 399,000 in ordinary public schools, which covers 23,796 schools. A total number of schools, 25,762, as I mentioned. When looking at the consolidated government expenditure, which is about 1.67 trillion, we will see in the social services, you have about 1.01 trillion, of which basic education has a total of 30.4 billion allocated to us as a sector. DM has mentioned the fact that we will focus on the social justice principles of access, redress, equity, efficiency, quality, and inclusivity. Those in the slides which are marked in red, which is the efficiency as well as quality, those are the areas which we as DBE definitely need to improve on. And I'm now on slide 11, if you don't mind, colleagues. Moving to the next slide, honourable members, we will look at the progress of performance of the sector. And again, I'm going to go to slide 13 and looking at access, which DM has mentioned. Here we see the percentages of 5 to 6 year old learners attaining at educational institutions, with 5 year olds standing at 88% and 6 year olds standing at 96.6%. As well as how we have improved over the years, you can see that the graph is on the rise and the upward movement. The next slide, which looks at access to schools, we look at the completion rates for grade 7, which is standing at 95.2%, for grade 12, where we need to improve, which is currently on 50.7%. The next slide again looks at the access of schools, and this focuses on secondary completion rates in comparison to other countries. Slide 17, we look at the number of students obtaining the matric from 1994 to 2016. Here we see that 58% of the youth successfully obtained the NSC or an equivalent qualification in 2016. Matric graduates increased from 275,000 in the late 1900s to where we are currently standing, over 400,000 learners in recent years. Going further and looking at redress, we look at the infrastructure functionality by province. Here we see that as a country, with regards to running water, we are standing at 75.9%, and you will see the individual provincial breakdowns there as well. Perimeter fences is 87.2%, electricity at 89.9%, internet coverage, we are looking at 55.3%, but also I want to mention here that an important aspect for me, honorable members, is access to data and educational content in the system being zero rated. Looking at adequate toilets, we are standing at 79.9%. The next slide focuses on school performances by quintile. Here We show our focus for redress in getting more schools into the 80 to 100% category, again proved by Gauteng getting all 15 their districts into the top 20 districts in the country. And this is the type of improvement we are looking at. The next slide focuses again on what we call a good story and the trend, which has been absent in our system for quite a long time and is now strongly coming to the fore pertaining to the no-fee schools, showing the increase in bachelor passes, the improvement in maths and science, technology, which is a good story as mentioned from last year. And all of this pertaining to our no-fee school performance, numbers having dropped in 2017 with the percentages have increased from 52% to 53% in 2017. We'll re-look at this slide again later. When looking at efficiency, here we look at the proportion of children having completed grade 1 by age, and we see that the 7-year-olds are standing at 63.8%, the 8-year-olds at 93.9%, and your 9-year-olds at 97.6%. The percentage of repeaters by grade and gender, we need to improve on this particular area by ensuring that schools stop holding back our learners for an improved pass rate. And this is an area that we are emphasizing even with the DG's visits to provinces to ensure that our schools are not holding back learners unnecessarily in the system. The next slide again, looking at out-of-school youth. Here we see the reduction in the number of out-of-school youth since 2002 to 2017, currently standing at around 4%. From a quality perspective, we see the improvement in bachelor passes standing at 160,000 in 2017. When we're looking at inclusivity, this again is a key focus area that we currently have to improve on and make sure that learners with disabilities have better access into the system. So this is one of our key focus areas already with regards to inclusivity. Looking at the class of 2018, we still see that the National Senior Certificate Examination results is one of the most important barometers in evaluating the success of the education sectors. And the progress in the sector has also been confirmed in the international and regional assessments, which we are not scared to participate in. DM mentions it, that these international assessments are like a marathon. You have to be part of the marathon to understand how difficult it is. When you're not part of that marathon and you stand on the outside and criticize, you have no right because you've not been part of the race. And South Africa as a country is not scared to participate in these marathon international assessments and compete with the best in the world. Looking at the profile of the class of 2018, the fifth cohort to be exposed to the CAPS curriculum, I'm now on slide 37. We're looking at the fourth cohort to be exposed. We're looking at the fourth cohort to be exposed to the CAPS curriculum, and in particular, teacher confidence and teacher output has improved over the years. The increased resource materials developed over the last 5 years. We also look at the standard and quality of the public examination is maturing, and higher standards are being phased in. Last year, we introduced 12 new subjects. And our key outputs of this cohort is predicated on the following policy imperatives, which remain the policy on progression, the policy on multiple examination opportunities, introduction of sign language as a home language, the introduction of specialization in the technology subjects, as well as the abolishment of the designated list of subjects to make access to higher education students wider than what it was in the past. The next few slides, from slide 38, looks at the new subject enrollments, and I must admit, honorable members, that these subjects were very demanding on the system, and the introduction thereof was very demanding on the system. The first was the introduction of South African Sign Language as a home language, but it was also very rewarding in the system. We have 52 learners that wrote this particular exam for the first time in 2018, and we believe that the numbers will increase as we move on. Looking at the rest of the new subjects, technical maths, technical science, civil technology construction, civil technology, civil services, civil technology woodworking, and you can also see the numbers that participated in these new subjects. Electrical technology, digital systems, electrical technology, electronics, electrical technology, power systems, and then the mechanical technology, automotive, fitting and machining, as well as welding and metal work. The next slide looks at the scope of the examination system, and as you can see, we have quite a massive system with 624,733 full-time learners. The question papers, 147 question papers. When we go to print for these question papers, we print about 8 million question papers. 8 million question papers are covered by about 7.6 million scripts, which is then written in about 6,888 examination systems, with about 65,000 invigilators looking after our learners and ensuring that there's quality. And then we move to about 41,000 quality markers coming into the system who need to know the subject matter and need to have been involved in actually teaching that subject the year before or at least 2 years before. And we cover that in 141 marking centers in the system. So you can see the sector and the examination is quite a complex task. The next slide I'm going to move to is the full-time enrollments from 2014 to 2018. In 2016 we reached an apex. Since then the learner numbers for full-time learners have unfortunately been dropping in the system, as you can see. We look also at the full-time enrollments per province in the next slide, and this shows where the main drops have come from. We see that Free State, Northern Cape and Western Cape have shown increases in learner numbers, but the rest of our provinces have had a decrease in their learner numbers. Moving to the part-time enrollments from 2011 to 2018, this remains an important area where we monitor the number of 17 and 18-year-old learners in the part-time category. This is very important for us as the DBE to ensure that learners are not unnecessarily moving out of the formal full-time schooling category and being shifted by schools into the part-time category. These numbers of learners are increasing, and we need to monitor this continuously to ensure that those 17 and 18-year-olds are not under the part-time category and that they are in the full-time cohort instead. Looking at the enrollment in terms of gender, we see the split for females being more than males. The next slide, which is slide 46, we look at the NSE subject enrollment. And again here, we need to monitor the shift of subject enrollments, showing the direction in which the subject selection of our learners is moving. Of concern, honorable members, is the BCM subjects that are dropping. You will see accounting with 11,000 drop, economics with another 11,000 drop, and you will also see mathematical literacy with a 10,000 drop in learner numbers, even mathematics with a 5,500 drop. Maths learners are moving back to pure maths. As you will know, it's simply quite easier to understand pure maths than mathematical literacy because of the complexity of being able to understand what you are reading, which we find in mathematical literacy. Whereas in pure maths, you just have to deal with formulas. Progress learners have increased by 21,204 in 2018, and the implementation of the policy on progress learners, we can clearly see here that has to be managed better. The number is increasing on a yearly basis, but this particular process has to be managed carefully and the policy being implemented correctly in the system. The next slide shows our cohort movement over the last 4 years, starting year the starting year to the end year, which is a 12-year period. We see 2004 to 2015, 2005 to 2016, 2007 to 2018. We have to remember that the grade 1 cohorts have numbers, in short, in this country, Chair, has been inflated over the years by undocumented learners accessing the education system. In some of our rural provinces, we also know that some of these learners actually enter at a very early age into the system because of the parents sending them to school, and even later you find that they have to repeat grade 1 again. And these are some of the main areas that are inflating our grade 1 numbers. This is also affected by the repetition from grade 9 that you will see there, and the movement of learners to TVET colleges. I'm going to move to the summary of the 2018 interventions with particular reference to the evidence-based report and providing a holistic account of learner performance, which we focus on. Here we see the inclusion include only extraordinary high impact interventions over and above schools or classrooms based support and the standardized support by providing quality inputs in the processes. The next few slides, Chair, I'm not going to concentrate on. We look at what we see there, our national learner support model, teacher, text and time, which is the emphasis that we concentrate on for the EBR report. the key learner support levers which drives the system, which still remains direct instruction, the resources in the form of LTSM, as well as indirect instruction in the system. Also, the learner support rationale, which is focused on our socioeconomic factors, which make it difficult for our poor or unemployed parents to afford extra tuition for our learners. And we also know that the Boga out there in the rural area is quite often not able to support those learners with the new complex curriculum that we deal with. Also, the width, the scope, and cognitive demand of the curriculum requires more time for learners with various cognitive levels, and the ever-increasing demand placed on both learners and teachers by the National Senior Certificate. Moving further, we also see the desire to go beyond the norm in meeting the increasing goals and targets of the system. I'm going to move forward. We can see what our focus areas are to improving the learning outcomes in the system, and those are the areas that we stick to. The next few slides from slide 56, honorable members, the NSLA remains the strategy to ensure learner attainment in our country, and the NSLA endeavors to meet the targets set out in the action plan for 2019 towards the realization of Schooling 2030 and the goals indicated in the National Development Plan. The aim of the strategy is to align key interventions across the sector. You can also see the reporting platform, DBE, which moves to TDCM, HEDCOM, CEM, Portfolio Committee, and even the Select Committee, which we come to here, the provincial office, district offices, and eventually moving right into the classroom and accessing the learner. The next few slides looks at our oversight and monitoring. You see a quarter one monitoring and the processes we've moved through with regards to those processes. The next one focuses on quarter three, and these are all report back mechanisms on what has happened already in the different quarters with regards to the interaction which we are providing. Also, the support for new subjects, which included South African Sign Language as a home language, which I mentioned, as well as the full implementation of CAPS 2 for technical subjects with a specialization including technical maths and technical sciences. We also see the support which these subjects had last year before the examination. Those are the next few slides that I'm going to move through. We look at the technical subject curriculum support programs, the learner support additional LTSM, which we implemented there, as well as the learner support with regards to ICT utilization. I'm now on slide 65. We also look at the subject-specific learner support, the extra tuition, vacation schools, LTSM, ICT utilization, which was offered to learners. And then we see there the vocation schools, the target participants which we interacted with. There is a picture of those learners also at one of those school camps where they participated. We had winter schools. You'll see the scope and size of our winter school program covered 1,097 camps and centers, and the total number of learners was about 237,000 learners in our winter school camps again. For spring schools, more or less the same period, also 1,100 learn centers, as well as 273,000 learners which participated in that particular process. You will look at the spring classes subject offering and the benefit of those individual learners. The example that you see there is where there was a 10-hour per subject allocation and learners being assisted. You see the improvement in the learners' performance with regards to that. Furthermore, our DG's engagement, which has been visiting all 9 provinces to assess the state of readiness. We are busy with those same meetings this year again. Last year we focused on quarter one and quarter two learner performance, reading activities per province, the progress of IIEL, as well as the state of readiness for the administration of the examination, which was covered beforehand. Looking at our subject-specific interventions, again there you see examples of those interventions in the different programs, and you will clearly see, as an example for Northwest, teacher support, all subject advisors, all teachers, progress learners, the learner intervention program, which covered underperforming learners and learners with a potential in maths and science, as well as accounting. The next few slides focuses on different subjects as examples. We also look at our prior interventions in support to the class of 2017. Again here, we look at the interventions per province, and we give you examples of exactly what transpired in those different provinces. As an example, on slide 82, you will see that the impact in Northwest for pre- and post-test results of the vacation camps. And you can clearly see the improvement of the post-test happening after the intervention from these vacation camps, as well as the impact it had on learner performance in the system. I'm going to look at some of the historical trends of the LSC exams. I'm now on slide 80, and this slide shows our performance since 1970, where we stood at 43,000 learners which participated in the matric examination, compared to where we stand now in 2018 at 476,000 learners participating in the matric examination. The LSE performance from 2012 to 2018, here we see the steady improvement since CAP implementation. We believe, Stoll Chairperson, we are a system on the rise, where we are as a country now standing on the 78.2% in 2018. The overall national results, again, here are policy initiatives, the policy on progression, the notion that progress learners is not new in the education system, as well as internationally. The policy on progression is tended to minimize the dropout rates and maximize school throughput in this country. And again, this policy is based on strict criteria which needs to be implemented, and it is the best practice across all education sectors in countries such as Finland, Sweden, Denmark, Japan, Korea, as well as the United Kingdom. Our multiple examination opportunity, again, the performance of progress learners is monitored in the grade 12 year, and they must demonstrate an acceptable level of achievement in all subjects to be allowed to participate in this particular process. Looking at the performance of the class of 2018, here we see the improvement by 3.1 percentage points in 2018 to 78.2%, with Eastern Cape showing the highest improvement, followed by Mpumalanga and KwaZulu-Natal. The performance of the class of 2018, where we exclude progress learners, Chairperson, you will see our performance excluding progression would have stood at 79.4%. Looking at progress learners excluded in the next slide again, I'm going to move to the performance of progress candidates only. This shows the performance of our progress learners with the 20,122 of 33,412 who wrote the exams, passing 7 subjects. Now remember, these are learners who should not have been in grade 12 if there was no policy on progression. But we see that 20,000 of them actually passed all 7 subjects, and we will go further. Remember, without the policy on progression, these learners would have probably have dropped out of the system or not have been in the formal schooling system. The next slide looks at the performance of our provinces, showing intervention program strengths and weaknesses. With regards to progress learners, what is important here, Chair, is that we see Western Cape is one of the worst, is actually the worst performer when it comes to progress learners, with a percentage achievement of only 33.6%. This comparing to provinces such as Gauteng, which stood at 70.3%, Free State at 65.2%, and even Mpumalanga at 64.7%. And when you look at the progress numbers, and I go back to the previous slide, you will actually see that Western Cape has got the smallest number of progress learners in the entire country, and at the same time being the worst performing province when it comes to the management of progress learners. Going further, we look at LSE passes by qualification type. Now, this is the qualification criteria for the LSE examination, Honorable Chairperson. What I want to mention is that in the old apartheid education system, where the pass requirement for higher grade subjects was at 40%. For standard grade subjects, was at 33%. And if you remember, there was a lower grade issue as well, which was at 25%. Going further from that, your aggregate had to be 800 out of a total of 1,800. And what you see there is the current pass requirements for the NSE examination, and where colleagues mentioned that our standards have lowered over the years, Chairperson. I'm now on slide 96.
You're left to 3 minutes.
Right. We look at the NSE passes by type of qualification, which means I have to speed up considerably there. Again, what is important there is our bachelor attainment standing at 33.8%. Going further, I'm going to move over most of these slides. I think on slide 97, we look at the bachelor achievement per province from 2018 to 2017. This is probably important, and there we also see how provinces have improved with regards to their bachelor attainment levels in the country. The next slide, again, the good story which we spoke about earlier with regards to no-fee schools increasing from 76,300 bachelor passes to where we currently stood in 2018 at 84,700 bachelor passes coming from our no-fee schools. Chairperson, our no-fee schools are producing now, this is the new story, the majority of bachelor passes in the education system, which is something which was not there previously. And this is the new narrative which even our president was highly impressed by. Again, looking at progress learners, we can see even in our progress learners, Chairperson, we had 2,676, 8% bachelor passes coming out of learners which were not expected to be in grade 12. Furthermore, we have 8,685 diploma passes at 26.2%, which came out of learners which were not supposed to be in grade 12. And this is the impact of the policy on progression. The next few slides, Chairperson, focuses on the performances in the quintile levels. I must mention also that when we look at slide 109 here, we focus on the performance in selected subjects. And this is an area which our emphasis is on, which we are monitoring all the time. We need to make sure which subjects' percentages are dropping. But important here, Chair, is that we do not only measure at the 30% level. We measure at the 40% because this is where we see where the quality is. We also measure at the 50% level to see how our learners are performing. And our emphasis is on improving the quality passes coming out of these different subjects in the system. And that is what you will see by the next few slides. Looking at district performance in 2017, we have four districts in the category 50 to 59%. In 2018, we had one district in that category, Chairperson, and we had 64 districts in the 70 and above category, whereas in 2017, we only had 51 districts in that category. So our districts have been doing quite well, Chairperson, with regards to improving on the percentage passes which they have obtained. From special needs education, again, the implementation of SL as a home language in grade 10, and the first SASL home language examination offered. 58 deaf learners were located in 10 schools across 5 PDs registered for that examination, as I mentioned earlier. We see also that our SNE learners, we had about 3,856 of them. I must admit, Chair, this number is not sufficient. And even in our DG visits over the past 3 years, it's an area that we have been focusing on with principals, district managers, to ensure that these learners have better access to the system, particularly when it comes to the application of concessions for these learners. We see that Western Cape has a greater advocacy campaign with regards to SNE learners, and that they are actually the only province that is doing really good with regards to this. We have to emulate what they have been doing there, Chair, and follow that particular process and implement it in all nine of provinces to ensure that these most vulnerable learners have access and better access to the education system. The next slide looks at our distinctions. The black indicates the increases in distinction numbers, and the red indicates the drops in distinction numbers. We've listed these per subject so that you can actually see where those distinctions are coming from and which subjects they apply to. I'm now on slide 125. Moving to progress learner candidates, you see those distinctions there as well. The next few slides focuses on the age analysis. We see that, Chair, the bulk of our learners are 18-year-old learners in the system and of appropriate school-going age. Younger girls do better. Older boys, on the other hand, do better. But furthermore, Chair, staying longer in the education system is not an indicator of performance. The longer you stay, the more you struggle in the system. The next slide at page 130 looks at the performance per age, and it will actually tell you what the percentage achievement in the last column is for all the different age learners. And you will actually see that our 15-year-olds in grade 12 are doing quite good. But remember, these are exceptionally clever learners that can be 15-year-old in grade 12. The next few slides focuses on the social grant. What is important here, Chair, is that we see we have 73,987 active social grant learners who participated in the National Senior Certificate. We also see when it comes to the performance of these learners that they had a pass rate of 70.3%, Chairperson. This clearly indicates the impact, the positive impact that social grants have on us as a country. In the next slide, you will also see that the bachelor attainments for the learners that are on social grant was even higher than the country's bachelor attainment. The social grant learners, measuring out of that cohort itself, they obtained a 37.37% pass rate for bachelor passes. And this is the impact of the most poorest and vulnerable learners in our country, and the impact that social grants have on the performance of these learners. So we have to monitor this particular process very and much, much better in the country, Chairperson. We also included correctional services, which is another intervention strategy. The next few slides focus on the Umadusi directives. Chair, I don't know if I should stop there, and we then rather allow Umadusi to come in, PG, and take it from there.
Okay.
Thank you.
Maybe you could just tell us quickly about the school-based assessment, just quickly.
Yes. When we look at the school-based assessments, the directives from Umadusi were to strengthen adherence to subject assessment policies in all subjects in all provinces. Our intervention strategies there include the gazetted policy and quality assurance of SBA in grades 10 to 12, also the implementation and quality assurance of SBA implementation to be a standard item on all national subject committee meetings. DBE is also to quality assure PD implementation of SBA and PATS in the sample districts in July and October of 2019, as well as PDs that need to ensure that all schools compile and implement the ATP and POAs. PDs also to monitor the implementation on an ongoing basis. Furthermore, it is to ensure that the internal moderation is conducted efficiently and effectively at all levels of the system. And you will see on slide, which slide is that? On the slide of school-based assessment, we talk to these issues. Also there, to ensure that sufficient and focused support is given to South African home, sign language as a home language, those are our key interventions with regards to school-based assessments. Key of these also is the moderation system and the sampling approach for SBA, the oral assessments and PATS, monitoring and support of schools and teachers, the mediation of the 2019 NSC PAT guidelines, monitoring and support of the administration of PATs at schools, verification of marks and levels of the system, subjects workshops on moderation, administration and post-moderation requirements at schools, as well as the quarterly monitoring and support of schools where rejected subjects or inflated SBA marks came through.
Okay, thank you. I know that Umadusi will see quite a bit on this issue. Stop there just to comment on the presentation itself. It is quite clinical, very clinical, full of detail, and you have actually included other aspects that have not been there before, like the correctional services, like the social grant, the impact of social grants on the performance. Those are just but a few that I can mention, but it is very clinical and one would appreciate this. Thank you very much. We can then hand over to Umadusi.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, Deputy Minister in absence here, honorable members, DG, senior colleagues from the department, ladies and gentlemen. With me here are two colleagues, the executive manager, Ms. Odabudimoko, I'm sitting on my extreme right. She's one of my deputies in the organization. And then we also have Memory Louise Madalani, who sits next to me here. She's Senior Manager for Quality Assurance of Assessment for Schools. Quality Assurance of Assessment, Memory Louise Madalani. I need to tend the apology of Professor John Volming. He had a long-standing appointment. When the meeting was postponed from last week, she could not fit this engagement. He has tendered his apologies for not being here. Chairperson, in the interest of time, I'm going to, with my colleague, rattle through the presentation. And the presentation outline stands as follows. We are looking at the mandate of UMALUSI and the regulatory framework, which has been established by this very parliament to say pass legislation that establishes UMALUSI through the GenFedCo Act and the NCAP Act. And we are looking also at the framework that we use for quality assurance of assessment. We are going to be looking at the quality assurance process undertaken in 2018, scope of the 2018 quality assurance of assessment, areas of good practice, areas of compliance, and tracking directives for compliance 2016 to 2018. We have given a directive to say the department must do this. We track how far they have attained that. We also going to be talking to standardization and resulting, and then I'll conclude with standardization and resulting after Memar Lewis would have done the other technical part. Having said that, we derive our mandate.
So just to interject, you are also allocated
35. Thank you. We'll try to manage that, Chairperson. Thank you very much. We derive our mandate from two pieces of legislation. The first one being the National Qualifications Framework Act, Act No. 67 of 2008. Specific sections in that act are sections 27H and 27I, very important. And then our founding act, which is the General and Further Education and Training Quality Assurance Act. And I want to just quote three clauses in the GenFedCo Act. Under Section 17A, it says the Council must perform an external moderation of assessment of all assessment bodies, all, not only DBE, but all others that I'll mention later on, and educational institutions. And it says also the Council may adjust ROMAs during the standardization meetings, and that the Council, with the concurrence of the Director General, and after consultation with the relevant assessment body or education institution, has to approve the publication of the results of learners if Council is satisfied that the assessment body or education institution has satisfied the conditions that warrant such an approval. So we do that every year. Now, we do quality assurance of assessment to ensure that the figures that are issued by UMALUSI to schools, to adult centers, and to TVET colleges are of the required standard, and that they are having currency in the system, and that the studies that we issue are credible. And we achieve that through the moderation of question papers. All question papers that are written would have received the UMALUSI stamp of approval. We moderate practical assessment tasks. We moderate common assessment tasks in the case of life orientation. We monitor and moderate school-based assessment. We monitor the conduct administration management of assessment, and we monitor and moderate marking to ensure that the marking is happening according to the set guidelines. We manage concessions where there is a need for us to give concessions, and we manage examination irregularities. We then standardize the results, and then we approve the release of the results. That is our quality assurance framework. Now, the National Senior Certificate is administered by three different assessment bodies in this country. Same NSC, three different assessment bodies, namely Department of Basic Education, Independent Examination Board, and Sakai. Sakai, the name of Sakai is in full, IB is in full. And then you look at the picture there, and you see how massive the system that the Department of Basic Education is running. In fact, there is a mistake in the 28 in the DBE part-time candidates. We have recorded the 1,150. It is in fact 176,000 for 2018. So it is a mistake that I want to apologize for. It is huge. It is massive. how the colleagues are able to turn it around and to improve so massively in terms of the improvements that they've seen is something that is has to be commended, and is something that we marvel at. The other systems are very small. They are very small. IB has got 12,000 candidates, and Sakai has got 1,600 candidates. What is important to know is that with the Act saying that we have to assume our responsibilities on an incremental basis, indeed, the system has been expanding, and we have been taking some of our responsibilities on an incremental basis. An example is the 12 new subjects that the colleague has just mentioned, including South African Sign Language. I'm in discussions with the DG on the instruction of the minister that even as we expand the mandate of Fumalus with additional subjects, the budget must also increase. Because we've got the staff that is overstretched, we've got the staff that work long hours, because they have to meet all these quality assurance obligations. Now, we moderated and approved, I'm on slide number 9, we moderated and approved 116 DB NSC November 2018 question papers, together with their marking memorandums, marking guidelines. And these went through different stages and levels of moderation between February and August of 2018. Between July and October 2018, Umalusi conducted verification of moderation of school-based assessments of 15 subjects that were selected from across the 9 provinces. Very important to note, we also checked the state of readiness of the system to run the examinations. Umalusi monitored a sample of 261 examination centers and 28 marking centers across the 9 provincial education departments. We attended, as Umalusi, 122 marking guideline discussions to do oversight and check as a quality assurer whether things are happening according to policy. 28 subjects were sampled for the verification of marking in 94 marking centers. DBE presented a total of 67 subjects for standardization of the November senior certificate examinations. All irregularities identified were dealt with according to policy, and we specify the policy there. This will start from the provinces, provincial examinations irregularities committees, and they will then be escalated to the national examination irregularities committees, and then Umalusi will consider the report and adjudicate on the matter. Chairperson, with your kind permission, I would request Member Luis Madalan to present the rest of the report, then I'll conclude.
Thank you, honorable members. I'm going to speak to the processes that we engaged in last year for the Department of Basic Education Quality Assurance of their assessment. First is the moderation of question papers. The slide there gives you how the 116 question papers fared when we were moderating them. 32.8% of those question papers were approved as such moderation, because they submit, we look at them. If we satisfied, we approve. If we not, it goes back so that they amend and it comes back. Some of the question papers came back to us up to the third level. But that's a great improvement, because if you see the comparison that we have made, in the previous years, we find that the number of question papers that came back to us second time, third time, it was far bigger than what it has happened in 2018. And when we did that, that we consider as an improvement, as you can see in slide number 13, I've summarized the improvements that are in the previous table. However, even if there are improvements, there are still some concerns that we have. On slide number 14, we're talking to the directive that we've issued to the Department of Basic Education. Also, it's a comparison from 2016 to 2018, because if we pick up an issue in, we picked up an issue in 2016, we recorded that and we requested that they must improve on it. They will give us an improvement plan. That is what Mr. Fisafi wanted to talk to, that they prepared an improvement plan for 2018, and then we monitor if they are really following that through. And on slide number 14, the first one, they reduced the number of question papers requiring more than 2 external moderation sessions due to non-compliance. We have seen an improvement, as was mentioned earlier, and the rest of the other items there, they also indicated improvement on them. And the next slide, 15, also speaks to that. But when you look at the item in the last column on slide 15 there, the last row, the conduct workshops to capacitate examiners and internal moderators in the searching of question papers, placing more emphasis on the criteria that we have indicated there. In that one, they have shown a decline, because then the number of question papers that did not comply to those criteria has increased in 2018, and so we're still keeping that directive, and we require the department to improve on that one as well. The next section, I'll speak to the SBA. We did moderate the SBA, like the CEO has alluded to, and on the slide you see the subjects that we moderated in 2018, and this happened in the 9 provinces. Now, in the moderation of SBA, a good practice that we have observed in the different provinces is the fact that some of the good practices, rather, that are noted in the provinces are listed there. Inclusion of the subject improvement plans in some Western Cape teacher funds. When I say it's an improvement, it's because in the previous moderations, we did not observe those. So the slide here has indicated in the different provinces what has improved. Still, we do then have directives. Like I indicated, we're tracking those. A few of them, they were compliant in. The one that was not compliant, which has happened in 2018, is that adherence to subject assessment policies. In all subjects, in all provinces, we say they must strengthen that one, and it's a new directive that we will be observing. Again, there's another directive, the one that you see, the third one on the first slide number 19, that there should be a discouragement of the use of recycled tasks and shadow marking in the provinces. That we have observed in 2017, again in 2018, and we still want the department to improve in that regard. Again, the other two there on slide 20, those are the non-compliance that we have noted in 2018, and we have issued a directive on those ones, asking them to work on that, and we will monitor that. The state of readiness, that is on slide number 22, we have done the state of readiness in all the 9 TEDs, but I need to mention the fact that the state of readiness happens before the examination is written. So what we have recorded here is what it was at the 2nd of October 2018. But because we did report to the department before the writing of the examination, most of these issues were addressed before the exams, because being highlighted, it meant these are the things that we feel can compromise the examination. And we're glad to say most of them were addressed then. But those that were not addressed, the department has to still look at. I've noted a few areas of good practice that we have observed there. There was a clear standard operating procedure that the Department of Basic Education has put in place and shared with the different assessment, rather with the different provinces, the 9 provinces. And when we monitor the exam, when the examination was written, we realized that following this standard operating procedure has made things to improve from what we have observed in the previous years. And there was also an increase in the monitoring of high-risk examination centers. As a department, they are able to identify the high-risk centers based on their state of readiness that they conduct before the writing of the exams. And when we came in to do our audit, we realized that all those high-risk centers were monitored effectively. There was an online monitoring report by the monitors, which was done in Mpumalanga, and that is also something that is of good practice that we noted. Then the directives for the state of readiness, those are on slide 23. The 3 that you see on slide 23, as they date back from 2016 to date, they are now compliant with, and we are happy, but that doesn't mean we're not going to continue monitoring that. We'll still look into those as we proceed with the other examinations. So on slide 24, 2 non-compliant issues, the Northwest and Free State PEDs, they need to strengthen or improve printing facilities to avoid manual handling of question papers, because that's something that we have observed and we feel that is a risk to the question papers. Then also in Northwest, there was did not adequately address norms and standards required for security at the printing site. So those provinces, we require the DBE to monitor and assist them in improving in that CA. The writing of the examinations, we monitor 261, as the CEO has already alluded to, and in KZN there were 36. We also included one center that is writing the NSE in Eswatini, which is previously known as Swaziland, but under the KZN. Then area of good practice, SASL home language exams as a new examination, but the department and the provinces really took strides to make sure that those candidates that are writing those examinations have the facilities that were necessary for one to be able to do that examination. So all those candidates had web cameras used in the centers where they wrote, and we commend the DBE for that initiative. However, there were directives issued, which were issued in 2016. These ones that you see on slide 27, to date, they're being complied with. We're happy with that. And on slide 28, there is two. One is partially complied with, which we issued in 2016, and that is that exam centers verify the candidates at the entry point for relevant documentation to avoid impersonation. We still find some centers that relax that. They did not really look at it as effectively as was required. And also that chief invigilators prepare daily situational reports and file copies of such so that whoever is monitoring can see the evidence that monitoring indeed took place. But then this was partially complied to, because 25.4% of the centers that we monitored did not adhere to the directive. The rest on page 29 is what we identified in 2016, but it's now complied with. Audit of markers selection. After the department has appointed markers before the writing of the examinations, we go out and then we audit the list of those people who are appointed as markers. And we did that throughout the 9 PEDs. And when we did that, we observed the following, that the PEDs use the PEM as the basic for selection of markers, and some provinces enhance that criteria. And in the good practice, you see down there on page slide 31, some PEDs were innovative in their marker appointment processes and used provisionally determined criteria to enhance the PEM criteria. They don't replace the PEM, but they add to strengthen the PEM. However, we also have a directive, that's a new one on slide 32, that the DBE must ensure that marker selection panels consider recommendations made by principals and or district officials in the appointment of markers. In a few cases, we found that there were markers on the list who their principals recommended that they not be appointed due to maybe not meeting one or two criteria, but we found that then the provinces did appoint them. Like I indicated earlier on, after our monitoring, we identified those, and those markers did not mark. So it doesn't mean that when they are here, it means they marked. But we put it as a directive so that when we do the marker audit of 2019, we should not find a case like this. Marking discussion. There also, we discussed the memorandum with a different internal moderators and examiners prior to those being used for marking, and the PED chief markers and internal moderators marked the authorization scripts, because those are the scripts that then tell us or determine their strengths and whether they are going to be able to manage the marking in their provinces. And that was conducted fairly well by the department and the PEDs. As you see on slide number 35, we see compliance with the issues that we indicated in the previous years, and we satisfied with how the marking guidelines went for 2018. The only new thing there, which is a directive, is in case of the SASL home language marking guideline discussion. I think you'll appreciate that the markers that are marking SASL, they are not all the markers that,
they have experience.
Firstly, they are not as experienced because it's a new subject, and they all not understand sign language. So when that is done, we encourage or insist that there should be interpreters. Hence, when this marking guideline discussion happened this year, there were not enough interpreters for the process. Hence, we require that in all the situations where we deal with SASL home language, there should be interpreters at all times. The verification of marking that happens when the provinces are marking, our moderators go out to the provinces to verify and check on the streets that the markers have marked. Internal moderators have moderated. We noticed a few areas of good practice. The following areas of good practice were noted. There were discussions and the marking guidelines were adhered to for most subjects. Approval of changes and additions of marking guidelines followed due processes, and the quality of marking was found to be fairly good by our moderators. Okay, now on slide number 40, there the directives issued in 2016, 17, and 18 are highlighted. The first one was complied with. Then the one that marking in each subject is synchronized across PEDs, and a more effective way needs to be found to guarantee that any approved changes to the final Umalusi approved marking guideline arrive timely in the PEDs was not complied with. The reason being that different provinces mark at different times. So if an issue can be identified in a province that is marking later than the others, then the learners of the previous province where they marked earlier may be disadvantaged, because if we approve that that item may be marked, then the rest of the learners in the previous province may be disadvantaged. Monitoring of marking. Monitoring is done by monitors as different from what is done by moderators. The verification, they go into the script, but the monitoring, the monitors look in the processes put in place to make sure that there is smooth running of the marking. And it is pleasing to know that the monitors reported positively about their respective monitoring sessions, and the following positive remarks regarding areas of good practice were made. Those are listed there, the areas of good practice. And when we looked at the previous directives that we have issued, we have realized that the DBE has complied. When you look at the first one, they complied with. Second one is partially, they are on their way to getting it right. Third one was complied with, and we were fairly satisfied with the running of the marking. And I'll give back to Boss to deal with the standardization process.
Thank you once more, Chairperson. I'm going to be very brief. Standardization and resulting is very important. It has often raised a lot of debate and controversies. Now, what is standardization? The understanding that we have is that it's a process that is used to eliminate the effects of factors other than the learner's knowledge, abilities, aptitude, and on their performance. It is not a process that is unique to South Africa. It is practiced by all large-scale assessment bodies. Why standardize? To ensure that learners are not advantaged or disadvantaged by factors other than their knowledge of the subject, their abilities and aptitude. And also to achieve comparability and consistency of results from one year to the next, so that an A symbol of this year should be the same as the A symbol of last year. Say a learner to be admitted in engineering with maths and physical science, his A symbol must carry the same weight as the A symbol of 3 years ago. That's what we are trying to do. The standardization principles that we adhere to are 10, but for the purpose of this presentation, we have mentioned only 4. No adjustment should exceed 10% of the historical average in either direction, upwards or downwards. Second, if the distribution of raw marks is below or above the historical average, the marks may be adjusted either way, subject to the limitations of 10% that we mentioned in the first block. In the case of an individual candidate, the adjustment effect should not exceed half of the raw marks obtained by the candidate. After considering qualitative and quantitative reports, Umalusi formulates positions on each subject. Very important. Now, one other thing that we need to emphasize is that we don't only standardize the results of the Department of Basic Education. You'll see the we've got Department of Higher Education and Training with their qualifications that we standardize. DBE is there with the qualifications that we standardize. IEB, same. Sakai, same. And BAA, same. We standardize all the results of the qualifications of the assessment bodies that fall under us. The standardization process, many people see it as that meeting where we consider tables and graphs at the end of the, but in fact, standardization is an 18-month process. And we illustrate that in the slide that follows, that is slide number 49. That question papers, when they are set, were already standardized because we are adhering to a particular standard. Examiners submit question papers to internal moderators for internal moderators to standardize. Internal moderators submit question papers to external moderators who are answerable to Malusi. They are our staff members, the external moderators. The question papers are approved by Umalusi, external moderators. Monitoring of the state of readiness is also standardization. Monitoring of exams, verification of marks and capturing of marks, standardization and approval of results by the members of the Assessment Standards Committee. That's what people see as standardization number 8. They look at that only. Yet, all these other processes are standardization. And announcement of the approval of the results by council. Very important to note in the next slide is the number of subjects in 2016 looking at the DBE. They submitted 2016, 58 subjects, 58 subjects, 2018, 67 subjects because of the increase in the number of subjects. Now, of the 67, 39 were left as raw. 17 were adjusted mainly upwards. 11 were adjusted mainly downwards. Now, what is important to note is that even where we keep the raw marks, we have standardized those results because we would have applied our minds before we arrive at that position. You know, so everything has been standardized. I want to, with your permission, Chairperson, say there is a tendency to compare the different assessment bodies and the positions that Umalusi arrived at. And that's unfortunate because IEB Sakai is different from DBE. When you do that, it's like applying the map of Durban in Cape Town. You come with the map of Durban, but you want to navigate the space in Cape Town because the dynamics in the two different assessment bodies are different. However, I need to indicate also that in the majority of cases, in the IEB, we'll retain raw marks. And I'll give you the reasons why that happens. Their system is small. And the majority of their subjects are non-official languages like Gujarati, you know, those Indian subjects, German, French, and so forth and so on. Very small numbers. And in the majority of cases, with the small numbers, we retain raw marks, including DBE. Where DBE has got small number of candidates, we retain raw marks. So IEB is small in size, one. And then they've got those other, non-official languages. Yeah, even worse, small. Sometimes it's 20 candidates. We retain raw marks. Now, they look better because of the size of their system. Chairperson, we realized yesterday that we did not include for you the standardization decisions, and we would want to apologize for that. It's a serious omission, more especially for the new subject, because honorable members want to know how the system fared with the new subjects and also the gateway subjects. I want to make a commitment that upon arrival at the office, you are going to send a full list of how we standardize these subjects. But for our purposes for now, just to quickly rattle through the new subject and the gateway subject. Technical sciences, we adjusted the marks upwards. Technical mathematics upwards. Civil services, raw marks. Civil construction, raw marks. Civil technology woodwork upwards. Electrical technology, digital system upwards. Electronics upwards, power systems, raw. mechanical, automotive, raw, fitting and machining, downwards, welding and mechanical work, upwards, South African sign language, home language, upwards, adjustments. Now, quickly, the gateway subjects. The DM did mention the issue of math and science. Life sciences, old biology, old terminology, old school of thought, raw. Physical sciences, raw. Mathematics, raw. Mathematical literacy, downward adjustment. Geography, upward adjustment. History, downward. Business studies, raw. Accounting, downward. Economics, raw. English, first additional language, raw. I've already apologized, Chair, that we are supposed to have given the full list in the presentation. We'll, however, write a letter to your office indicating all the decisions that were taken upon arrival at the office. As we conclude, we need to indicate that the running of the National Senior Study is regulated by the regulations pertaining to the conduct, administration, and management of the NSC. Very important, in order for us not to compromise the credibility and integrity of the examinations, these regulations have to be adhered to. And it is the duty of UMAS to ensure that, indeed, they are adhered to. Slide number 52, I'm not going to read through it. We need to indicate and commend the department for the rigor with which they monitored the examinations, both at preparatory phase and during the conduct of the actual examinations. Also, commend the department for the swift response in dealing with the different cases of alleged irregularities and submitting reports to UMALUSI for UMALUSI to adjudicate on the matter. Now, we urge the department to address the directives for compliance as discussed by Memory Luis Magalan. What follows on slide number 53 is the approval statement that Professor Volmink read to the South African public pertaining to the Department of Basic Education. We commend the department for the growth that they've shown and for taking the directives that UMALUSI gives seriously to the point where they will implement and we see improvement as indicated by Memory Luis Magalan. And where we say there has been a partial improvement, that they take those seriously. What happens is, as I conclude, Chairperson, we meet on a quarterly basis with the department under the leadership of Mr. Pedi Pedayaki on behalf of the DG and Dr. Rufus Polia, where we look at this and we check the progress that the department has made in addressing those issues. On that note, Chairperson, we thank you, and we thank you for the support that you are giving to the work of UMALUSI as a quality assurance body. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much for the presentation. It is also quite detailed. And I take note of the fact that you have included also new features like the good practice section of your report. No, thank you very much. We also accept the apology that you are going to be sending the rest of the last part of the presentation where you give it subjects where there was standardization. We'd be happy to receive that. Honourable members, we've come to the end of the presentation. It is time for discussion, remarks or questions to both DPE and UMALUSI. Honourable Mampuru, Honourable Samka, Honourable Ngwenya, Honourable... that way. Let us go that way.
Let me congratulate the department and UMALUSI for their presentation. Raise a concern first that why were we not invited as members of the committee to observe the presentations of the results? I've got one question, Chairperson. I'm concerned about the performance of Limpopo province. I don't call it an increase because we are still far beyond recognition. I just want to ask the department, what measures are there in place to assist the province so that it jacks up? Because I don't understand what might be the problem. because the issues of merging, we have been discussing about all these other things called transport, we have been discussing all these other, what are the challenges that makes Limpopo province not to perform up to where they are. Thank you, Chair.
Department or team before the year we basic education also now women's models. You know, Chair, sometimes the oversight we can let either in that police, but you can really be assist. Bonagala then Salo London with Pum Muzeke. Eastern Cape. When the Department of Basic Education says that the intervention in the Eastern Cape, I was under the Lola and the Portfolio Committee, also the Office of the Premier, in the Babeshe Biomedis at the Eastern Cape, but the Kabele in Babu, Namsanjas, Kabalzanda, the Eastern Cape, Isukile, Unama last, number two, from the Kabele, Lord of Mele, Indoba. Nango now comes a little bit of a city. Musa is owned by the standing committee, also basic education national. No man knows it will be Namstanja setting in the Eastern KQ number. No one of the single city get Matola Anyong Angle. Also, Mamu Enji Mutseha and her deputy to assist, more especially in the area of the Eastern Cape. Sometimes, as politicians, when it comes to our oversight role, as Iboni we always defend our provinces when it comes to oversight. More especially the areas where there are problems or challenges. But Ibonaka and Pastrele is Pumozizi, saying the whole family of the APCT. Chair, now my question is, when the scholar Mr. Mweli Kanga Zenzis perform the government more special with results. You don't know Yenzoa, as I went to my department, who knows up also. Now, where's teacher? Going to perform the government. You don't need department to go to Roba. Is our notice up? Uyo. The year upper woman lose. The eight criteria is taken to Swayo, who identify Ababan to Bazim Makas. Ukhangelwa mhlawumbi abantu abasebebhenshelwe or ukhangelwa kwizikolo eziperforma kakuhle then kudiwe masinikwe aba bantu so that napha kwi-marking because mhlawumbi kwezinye areas umzekelo if ukuthatha usamka ndeze umzekelo ngamba soko le nto ngafuna ubhesemntwini kuba ebabuhlungu xa siyemntwini kube ngathi unento ngakuye usamka lo ayomakha ayoba yimakha yintoni ejongwa kuye because kwezinye zezikolo phawula into okokuba abanye abantu kuthathwa kuba wayekhe wayititshala ngaphambili ungakhathaliseki nento okokuba wayeperforma kanjani ezilonge ezawufumana umsebenzi yenze loo nto mhlawumbi kuba kube khona kuqhwalela abantu abaninzi izikolo okanye abantwana abaninzi bangabhakhi ngenxa yentoba the mark ayukawazi kakuhle umsebenzi wayo. Yeyiphi criteria esetyenziswayo to make sure that the person who's going to be the marker uzokwenza to her okanye to his best into okokuba lo mntwana ekugqibeleni angafeyini. Enkosi Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. My apologies for coming late. We thank you for the presentation, both the presentations. My questions will be mainly on Umalusi. my first question, because we'll be on slide 14.3 on the examiners and internal moderators, that the percentage is still standing on 59 to 60, where examiners and moderators have to improve their ability to set higher order questions. Now my question is, 3 years in succession is standing on the same percentage. What is it that needs to be done to make sure that this percentage goes up? Because it is important that the questions that are asked in these examinations for our children, the standard goes up. It does not go down, it does not remain the same. In the interest of making sure that we have matriculants who go out there and we are confident in knowing and proud in knowing that they did well and it was not an easy paper for them. So what is it that can be done to make sure that these examiners and moderators are able to do that for us? My next question is on slide 24, on the non-compliance as well. I just want to go there as well. With I think it's both Northwest on both the non-compliance. I don't know what happened to my questions. I don't see what I wrote there. Oh yes. Thank you for helping me. Yes. Cause I didn't bring my notebook, so I'm all over the place because I was late. So yes, that's where my question ends. Yes. Then I need also to know, although Mama Zeta Chilindaba of appointing a Mama Kals, I'm also interested on the criteria that is used on the markers that are appointed to mark our children's papers. If you can tell us the criteria and how do you select them, and is there any training in particular, especially for teachers that have pensioned, that you give them to ensure that they are in par with what is going on now in our schools, the curriculum and all that, when they mark our children. The issue of the sign language markers as well. What is the criteria used in getting those markers? I understand that this is new and we still have a shortage in the people who mark the sign language, but in the interest of making sure that these kids are marked fairly, what is the criteria that is used in appointing those markers? Slide 47, the principles. My interest is on principle 1 in particular, where it says that, oh, the adjustment, that it should not exceed 10%. Is 10% not too much? Can we not take it a bit lower, that the adjustment should not exceed, I think 10% is a bit much, but I don't know, it's just my thinking, that is it not a lot, the 10%, but you will educate me on that. The raw stats that you have given us there, that you said you will send to us, The economics, if I captured you correctly, and business studies, I think you said they remained raw.
Yes.
I'm just interested in knowing that, is it because we have a lesser number of candidates who are taking part, who are taking the subject, or what is the reason behind them being left there as raw? Thank you, Chair.
Where are we published for?
Thank you, Chair. Okwam kukwaleka usundulo kwinto ethethe ngulimo bendibhalile apha. Isiqhelo siyayisa ingqondo. Sesesiqhelile
invite our lead department, Ukuya, the results of the metric all the past 4 years. And I know we know back, we have all the lalo. If you look at this part, DJ, in the book, tell us invite Hank. Ten, honorable member, I mean, many of you are my congratulations on the pass rate. He escalated Leo Pinon free paying schools. I was very impressed in London. The end I Paula went like all in the bar. The other one done was selling. But passing also over passing gun. It says a lot, put Bazali. Ba baya patalelo, they get rebated. Baya patalelo unfulment. And what does it mean? Kwa baba ba patalelo ay ngabazalba. Pifi paying schools. And yandenza into ba the thing ngakumbi na ngakumbi. That enda kumbongo. When swelo, of swelo, ulam. Ungayazi uba ixesha elizayo uzawuphila yintoni na ngoba abantwana bafunda ngexhala that's why bebhasa kangaka. Chairperson, also I want to comment on sign language and my congratulations on improvement. This is a sector elityalayo kakhulu ndindi. I'm very happy in the work for Umasuko or Koi. Ngaku, Gigi, the presentation is silent on Ukban Zai Roland Jani Le Lendo Izandeas, but it's the end of 5 years, le Fifth Parliament. But when the interested in the woman is like Kapazela in the one I roll and Jan is tablet with rural areas in the Tetanagetat. But who's a Kubekatoni? Window is one and Nel Lali. They ask about who travels out Timidik as Dolopi. Is out for my neck, but in the neck color lava. Buses lali in the bus. It roll out is a bonaranja. Including, okay, Mandi Yekelele, it debate. Slide 37. Oh, Sente Chilengai. Nale, nale. Okay, is it? Mandi Yekele, it is. Yekele, it is. Yes, it is. Finally, GM. And say him killing, but gay around there.
Why don't get worse, sir? Paulus kan me toch moeder al Kroatisch op?
Nee, ik leek het wel.
No, I won't do that. I was a bit surprised that contrary to the minister's position, you know, every year with the matrix results you get the political bickering going on between provinces and then the percentage here and then there's different interpretations, and it's actually a political debate that doesn't take us anywhere. I was a bit concerned that the department in its presentation overemphasized certain aspects, taking us into the political bickering that goes out there every year after the matric results came out. It is actually strongly contrary to the position that the minister took on this. Thank you for the presentation and then also the extent, taking us back right to 2004. However, I want just to motivate my question. I think if one take away the matric results media exposure, the single thing that dominated education in 2018 was some report about the literacy rate of grade 4 pupils, learners, 10-year-olds, on which it was found that 78% of them could not read at that stage and understand what they were reading in any language. And also that 45% of grade 4 classes do not have a single learner who can read properly and make basic inferences to what they have read. Now, it appears that the department has got extensive data on this going back many years. And we know that mother tongue language in the first 3 years, mother tongue education in the first 3 years remains a big challenge in this country. And there is extensive research done on this, not only in South Africa, but internationally, also specifically in South America. My question is there any relationship to learners who are being deprived mother tongue education in the first 3 years, the formative years, and the outcome later? I'd love to know that, because I believe that, strongly believe that, and I've again seen this now recently, where learners are being forced into a school where they cannot understand in any way any of the two languages that are being presented at those schools, that they are totally lost, and it takes them a long time just to try and catch up. Do we have in the department any statistics? I know it doesn't really relate to the matric results, but as you went back to 2004, how did it impact the child has got a two years disadvantage about his learners at the same age? How does it impact on later life? That's all. Thank you for the work that has been done. Umalusi always, perhaps because it's a bit of a secretive process, not as open as we, at the stage when the adjustments are being made, it always fascinates me what comes out there, but it's very good to have this understanding that as was made. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. The DG Umalusi and colleagues, let me apologize for arriving late and also up front leaving early. Let me do like what Umalusi has done and be up front. And say, Chair, be that as it may, I do want to go to the issue of the Durban map. Because I was the Cape Town map. Because it's good to know when these kids go to tertiary, they get to the same class. No lecturer will ask them if they were IEP or NSC. And when they do get their marks for their first year, the marking is just the same whether you are coming from IEP or NSC. So I just want to also be upfront with my Durban map. That sounds like Cape Town map. I would like to also get information in respect of the standardization of the IEP so that I compare that to the NSC. Chairperson, I also would like to find out from both the department and Umalusi. I'm not good with number of PG, so I don't know which is which here. I'm looking at Umalusi's presentation, slide 7, and the department's presentation, slide 45, and slide 90, page 45. On the numbers, or there is somewhere maybe where I'm wrong. So it's a clarity seeking question. Numbers road, DPE, you have got 512,000. Excluding progress learners, you have got 479,000. When I look at Umalusi and their figures there of DPE full time, 2018, they've got 619,000. Now, I'm saying to myself, what has happened here? Why are these numbers not talking to each other? There might be a reason. I just want to find out where am I wrong here. And DG, KZN, the province where I come from, on slide 69, winter schools. The province is second to Gauteng in terms of population. But our KZN camps, there are only 40. I'm not happy. With a total of 11,000 learners. Are you happy, TG? If you are not like me, what have you done about it? Again, TG, on slide 97, it's again a question of interest pertaining to numbers and population again. I just want to find out, has maybe this struck the same chord with education like it's doing with me? How the population is much greater than KZN, but their numbers wrote they had 94,000 matriculants and KZN had 116,000 matriculants. Is it maybe because most of us go to Gauteng when we are already beyond school age? What is the reason for it? Why is KZN having a population that is second to Gauteng? But in terms of our grade 12 learners, we have got more learners at school than they do. It's just those issues, Chair. Maybe I said if I can also apologize maybe for also leaving early. Last one, Umalusi, standardization. When you do your moderation, Umalusi, and also you get your standardization at the end, is there, they say in your terminology, correlation between what you have detected and what comes out at the end? And if there is, what do you do? Because I don't know whether standardization is a good thing or a bad thing. It's always interpreted negatively. So what I'm trying to drive at is, if you can detect that there is a likelihood for standardization, what do you do with your moderation? Is there a relationship between the two? I hope you don't get where I'm coming from. Thanks, Chair.
I'm
fine, Honorable Chair.
Okay, I'll ask the question.
Okay. No, thank you. My few questions, DG and Umalusi, starting with the Department of Basic Education. The Honourable Deputy Minister said earlier on that we have done as a country extremely well in relation to access. But when you read the numbers of access in 2007, or to believe those that access primary education in that year and were the ones that were writing grade 12, if my calculation is right, it means half what was able to pull through to the final matrix. That says to me the rate of dropout is quite high. Where are the students? Did they go to TVET? What happened to them? If at the beginning they were over a million, but when they write the matric examinations about 600,000, then there's quite a big number that are getting lost on the way. Another question that I wanted to ask is the standard of education as it is dispensed by DBE and the standard of education as it is dispensed by IEP. What is the difference? Because a perception is created out there that when you write that kind of examination IEP, you are much better than a child or then that is going to write the national senior certificate. What is the difference? I did ask the question about the occupational subjects and the qualifications of the teachers and the equipping of those classrooms that are going to be used for practical subjects in those schools. Is there a need to retain maths lit? Is there still a need, DG, to retain maths lit? Or is it the kind of a subject that needs just to be phased off and we focus on mathematics as it was the case before? And my last question on DB is the lower quintile ranking schools performing exceptionally well. Let me start with Progress Learner. Progress Learners have done exceptionally well. But the notion of increasing the number of Progress Learners says to me, teachers do not do their bit of work in the lower grades at grade 11, knowing that the children are going to be progressed in any case. But it becomes tricky when they perform well. I think it is a subject for research. It is a subject for research to me because I can't understand why is it that they were very weak at grade 11. They had to be pushed. So city guesses should get to do. They had to be pushed into grade 12. The minute they are there, they begin to perform well. So it's an issue that I seek clarity on. And then the issue of low quintile ranking schools performing much better than the higher quintile ranking schools. I think it is another subject for research because one couldn't understand how is it that areas that are socio-economically disadvantaged are performing better than those that almost have it all. What is happening here? I just seek a clarity in terms of because you are in the situation yourself. Learner enrollment in terms of gender. Well, we really do appreciate that the females, many girl children are passing grade 12, 54.8, and males are 45.2, but you don't want the boy children to be throttled. I think it is consistent with the demographics. That is just the only reason. Not to say that maybe the boys are lazy or they're not able to pull it through. I just think that it is the demographics of the country. That is just a comment. I am worried about the declining enrollment in the gateway subjects. Not the performance, the declining enrollment of students that are studying those subjects. What could be the reason for the decline in the enrollment? Malus, what is the relationship between SAQA, NQF, and Umalus? What is the relationship? If you could just explain that to me. Schools that are still getting 0% pass, what are you doing with the leaders of those schools? Are you changing them? What is the consequence management? I know that education will pay a teacher a full salary even if they produce a zero result in physical science. There is no consequence management at all, but when the entire class gets zero, nobody passed in that class, and people were drawing salaries from the beginning of the day to the end. What is the consequence management teaching? Well, those are the few questions that one has. I would then allow you to decide who's going to respond on what, both in the DPE and Oman. Thank you.
Chairperson, I'm pleading with the DG that I start that maybe will mop up everything. If you agree, Chairperson. I'm starting from the questions that were raised by Honorable Pamka. I didn't get any questions for Marisi from Honorable Mamburu. The criteria for the appointment of markers. And this will also respond to some of the questions raised by Honorable Ngwenya, are clearly indicated in the PEM document of the Department of Education. PEM.
Personnel Administrative Measures.
Yes. Oh. I was coming to that DG. You stole my thunder. The DG stole my thunder. I was about to explain what PEM is. Personnel Administrative Measures. So they clearly give the criteria of who has to be appointed as a marker. One of the things that is important to note is that it has to be people who are active in the teaching of the subject in that particular year. And they must have taught it for a certain number of years. Very important. They must have a major in that subject. They must have a major experience, and the department also consider the performance of the students, their students in that subject. Because it is an indicator of whether that teacher understands the subject and will understand even alternative answers that are given by the students. The retirees are not markers. They don't even have to be empowered to mark. They are at home. They must enjoy sitting on the stoop and looking at the windmill. You know. Yeah. Look after the grandchildren, not at the marking center, but at home. So every attempt is made not to disadvantage the learners, because the learner is giving his or her best, and has given the best even beyond the understanding of the teacher. Then, if that happens, we are sitting with a problem. The teacher must be able to give credit where it is needed. Now, the issue of that was raised by Honorable Mwenya on the capacity of the examiners and moderators. We hold joint sessions for external moderators and examiners, so that they've got a common understanding of what we mean by standards, what do we mean by cognitive levels, what do we mean by level of difficulty in the individual subject. And we do that in the subject that has become problematic, as identified by Memory Lewis Madalani's processes. Now, we have also met, as the different bodies that report to the Department of Basic Education. I'm talking here about ETDP CETA, ELRC, SAIS, UMALUS, and the DB itself, to say we need to have a model for the training of examiners and moderators and monitors. So this is work in progress. This is still in its infancy. Member Luis Madeline is leading the team of specialists from these different organizations, and they are going to be reporting to the CEOs. You'll talk to that, Martin, it's a teacher. They're going to report to the CEOs of this body and to the DG to say what model do they recommend. right. So we are doing something about it. The Northwest and the Free State printing facilities, let me compare them with the printing facilities that we say are acceptable. The printing facilities that we accept are acceptable are the printing facilities where the paper is printed, discounted by the machine, it is packaged by the machine, at the end of the value chain, nobody tends to leave the hard papers like this. Those are the problems that you are not mentioning, like Mpumalanga, Kenya, they've got those systems. But this one, they are handling the papers manually, counting, moving them from one room to the other to go count, put them in the... Then there is human contact with the papers. And they are outsourcing the systems. For instance, the Free State is outsourcing to CETA. And then after printing at CETA, the question papers still have to be transported to a warehouse somewhere where the people deal with the question papers now manually. We are saying we don't want that manual system. We don't want that manual system. It has to be automated. And we have said to them that has to be corrected. Now, I've already mentioned the issue of pensioners. They don't mark. The criteria for the appointment of South African Sign Language, home language, is the same as the PAM. But then they have to have the necessary requisite skills for this subject. They must be able to sign and so forth and so on. And they must understand each and every history will have its own criteria. I mean, in terms of what do you require from a history marker, mathematics marker, as compared to South African Sign Language. It is just unique requirements for that. Now, the principal training of markers. Training of markers, the department will talk to it. Yes. Can I talk to the principal of 10%?
Yes.
10%. This is policy that has been there.
I'm sorry to interject. Once you're explaining that, there's something that is coming into my mind.
Yes.
The issue of 10%, let me say, when you do the standardization, when you decide to give 10% or 6 or whatever percentage, do you give it to all the learners irrespective of their performance, or do you select certain specific learners that you are going to standardize? Because what happens if a person got 95% and you have decided to add 6%?
Yeah, I'll come to that. Let me explain first the principle. Council, according to our founding act, can have established its own policies. And those policies have been established considering international best practices. We have gone to other organizations and 10% was the figure that was agreed upon. There have been one instance since my arrival at Umalusi where we have had to exceed 10%. It was in 2008 with the new physics. There were a lot of problems. The assessment of COVID exceeded 10%, but that 10% will not fly until it goes to council, for council to endorse it. Now, let's look at what 10% does. 10% is a learner who gets 30 out of 300. 10% of that is one mark.
Okay.
I've done a quick calculation, 90 out of 300, it is 3 marks. A learner who gets 200 out of 300, is 6 marks. Minimum is 6 marks downwards or upwards. Depending on in which direction you are standardizing. And if we have the standardization booklet, you'll see those marks indicated, minus 3, minus 1, minus 2. It's not huge. It's not huge. Now, I'm coming to the question of Honorable Zwani. To say...
The standardization booklet, do we have access to this? If someone wants to.
The standardization booklet, we don't make it public because people make, and I'll come to the question that was made by Honorable Hutton that it's a secretive process.
Okay.
It's not secretive, it's confidential, I'll explain that. We don't make it public.
Mm-hmm.
People misuse it.
Okay.
And they confuse the public.
Mm-hmm.
And some people speak with authority and people believe them. We find that they are misleading the nation.
Okay.
So. What I've done with the portfolio committee, I was invited to come and do a presentation on standardization, and I did that.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a better understanding there. But some of the things that I'm touching on now will help to understand the process. But let me go to the question of Honorable Zwani. There are instances when we do block adjustment. And we don't always go to 10%. It could be 3% adjustment, block adjust across the board. But there are instances where we do scaling. Because it could be that the question paper was difficult for the lower achievers, but easy for the top achievers. Or it was too easy for the distinction candidates, but too difficult for the lower candidates. So you can't do the adjustment across the board. It has to be scaled to suit the category that you want to correct. Right. It is the qualitative input. DG, you're still in my DG, steady DG. Okay, we compliment each other. I wanted to make another point before I come to the point that the DG is making now. That the four of us sitting here, a DG gets 90, I get 88, she gets 70, she gets 60. Not to say that's always an underachievement. but even with standardization, as we standardize, there's no way in which the rank order is going to change. The rank order will never change. DG will retain this position one. The rank order will not change. And this has been fed into the computer, that it takes care of these things. So that you are not compensated unnecessarily with standardization. Find that now Zora is now getting 100 and DG is making 90. I think that clarifies the point. Now, how do we arrive at standardization? And this answers the question that was asked by the honorable member on economics and business studies. What informed our position of Roma? It's not because the subjects are small.
Okay.
It is because of the patterns that we saw on the tables and the graphs. That the patterns will say, first of all, what you consider is the five-year average in that particular subject.
Okay.
What are the patterns
yeah.
in this subject looking at the five-year average? And what is happening this year? What is happening this year as compared to that norm? Because that five-year average is going to give you a norm.
Yeah.
Are the results better than the norm or lower than the norm?
Yeah.
If they are above the norm, we want to know from the DG, why are they above the norm? If the DG says, I appointed 100 subject advisors across the country in this subject, then it explains why it is higher. We'll retain that good mark. Ne? If there's been a teacher strike and it is below the norm, the learners maybe were not well taught. We'll not push the marks to the norm. We'll accept the raw mark because they were not properly taught. So some people think that standardization, even the achievement, the interventions that the DG and his team are bringing in, they're not considered. We consider them, and where the mark is better, we say, the mark is better, let's leave the norm. It is good that the marks are better because of the interventions.
Okay.
Now, it's not only the norm, it is also pairs analysis.
What is that?
Pairs analysis.
Okay.
Pairs analysis. We look at cognate subject, cognate, is that the way, of the same family?
Cognate.
Is it cognate?
Cognate.
Cognate, yeah. If we look at the cognate subjects,
mm-hmm.
we will expect a learner doing mathematics, we take all the learners who do mathematics and physics,
yeah.
And we compare how they performed in the two, and the two are comparable,
mm.
and we expect them to perform almost
the
same level.
Yeah.
Now, but if the learner gets high marks in mathematics and low marks in physics, there are the problems with physics. Because the pairs analysis have to inform us. Coming to the point that the DG wanted me to make earlier on,
yes.
it is a question of the qualitative inputs. We've got examiners, the markers, they write the report to say, how did the learners experience the paper?
Okay.
We've got the external moderators also presenting that. We've got what we call a Dumalusi post-exam analysis, where the specialist sees and says, the paper has been written now, how did the learners experience the paper?
Mm-hmm.
All those are considered before we say upward adjustment, downward adjustment,
oh,
or wrong.
Okay.
And they are debated. They are debated.
Yeah.
We show each other things that maybe Mr. Muri would not have seen or Mark Lewis would not have seen.
Mm-hmm.
We convince each other, but based on the facts on the table and the table, facts on the table, from the qualitative report, and also from the norm, and from the PEAR analysis. I think this explains it.
Yeah, perfect.
This explains
so, thank
it.
Thank you.
Yes. Can I go to the other points quickly?
Let me just emphasize the fact that standardization is not a secretive process. It is a confidential process. Secret and confidential are different. See, secret has got some negative connotations, something is done in the corner, that people are finicky there. But with confidential, we are saying we respect these learners. We don't want them to be their results to be spoken about before they are even announced officially, to the point where they would panic. To say, no, this was done this way. And once you make that kind of noise in the public domain, you create more anxiety in the minds of learners who are between these subjects and so forth and so on. Hence it is confidential. So not secretive, actually. I wanted to respond to Honorable Kaunda, but the other members will give him feedback. First of all, we don't have IEB and NSC. We don't. It is NSC. NSC assessed by DBE, IEB, and Sakai. One qualification. So that the people confuse the terminology. They say, no, this one has done the NSC. Meaning that it is DBE, and this one has done IEB. Wrong. It's wrong. We have all done NSC, administered by the different assessment bodies. If we could have that understanding as a country, and all of them are quality assured by Umalusi. They are all quality assured by Umalusi. Umalusi is the one that is accredited IEB to offer the NSC. And Umalusi has got the right, if the IEB drops the ball in terms of quality, to withdraw the accreditation. And these learners are getting one certificate from Umalusi. They don't get the IEB certificate. Indeed. Slide 48, in my presentation, will show all those bodies that fall under us, that offer the different qualifications. I think I've made the point adequately. What we'll do, 48, what we'll do, Honorable Chair, is that when we send the rest of the standardization decisions, like I said, it was an omission, we'll also send those of Sakai and IEB for the NSC, right? The standards are the same, and also that we've got the same moderate. Let me just make this point, that where the question was raised whether the IEB standards are higher. Let me make it later, because I'm confused myself. Let me finish first with Honorable Kaunda. I want to apologize to Honorable Kaunda that the Umalusi numbers are wrong. And I did make that point at the beginning to say the numbers that are right are those of the department, and myself is the one that made just a small mistake by getting the numbers wrong. Can you do my favor with your mic?
Yeah, I'll charge you
in a minute. Now, thank you very much. Now, I apologize for the wrong numbers. Indeed, those of the department are correct. Going to correlation between moderation and standardization, Honorable Kaula, all these are interlinked. None of them happens in isolation to the other, because the very moderators do prepare qualitative input for the standardization process. So they don't operate in silos. There are different steps that we follow, moderation, this, that, but they complement each other. There is synergy, and they inform each other. So the processes are interlinked. The standards between DBE and IEB, NSC. Both NSC, Sakai, DBE, and IEB. Very important to note is that they are all doing the national curriculum statement. That has been approved by the Honorable Minister. And then they set the papers individually according to the standards set in the national curriculum statement. And having done that, they send the papers to the Umalusi external moderators. The Umalusi external moderators for accounting, for instance, would be the same moderators for IEB accounting, DBE accounting, and Sakai accounting. Same standards. And they'll ensure that they maintain the same standards. Cognitive levels, levels of difficulty, and so forth and so on. So it is a myth. The difference is with the IB described schools, there are fewer learners in class. The parents are of the middle class and high income class. They've got small class sizes, they've got laboratories, they've got libraries. So they inline the difference. So there are no better standards here. They get one sitting lead from Manus. And when they sit in class, at the university in their first year, no one is written IEP what. They are all NSC. I think I've made the point adequately, Honorable Chairman. Is there a need, maybe I should, though this question was directed to the DG, but I want to just come in on, is there a need to retain mathematical literacy? Yes, indeed. And I will explain why. For me, the people who have done mathematical literacy are like actuarial scientists. They can make projections. They can tell me that, Ragumas, if you leave a Cape Town and you're driving to Joburg, at this speed, you're going to arrive at this time with so many stopovers of so many hours or so many minutes. They are able to do that calculation. We need those people. We need those people. There are the people who are saying, if you save R1,000 a month for 10 years with compound interest, at the end of the 10 years, you'll be earning so much money. We need those skills. There is a school of thought that says we're not supposed to have called this mathematical literacy. Because now we have premised the subject against mathematics. There is a school of thought, and until this morning, until you raise the question, I disagree with that school of thought. That says this is supposed to be qualitative literacy as a subject. Because immediately you say mathematical literacy, you begin to think about mathematics and compare this subject unfavorably with mathematics.
It is arithmetic
or functional mathematics. So I'm going to give somebody a handshake when I get to the office. They say, they've been saying we should push that to be consulted, and I've been saying no, it's mathematical. So I'm going to shake this gentleman's hand and say, maybe you're right. So that we separate the two, because they've got different purposes in the curriculum. Honorable Chairperson, as I learned, I'm going to deal with the relationship between Omalusi and Thao.
And
NQF. What is important to note is that you've got an NQF which establishes four bodies in the country. SAQUA, Umalusi, Council on Higher Education for the Universities, and QCTO for the CS. All of these are sister organizations forming the National Qualification Framework, each with unique responsibilities. Each with its own CEO, each with its own council. And those councils are appointed, in my case, my council is appointed by Minister Mucheha. That of SAQUA, CHL, QCTO are appointed by Menaleni Pando. Now, according to our founding acts, each of these bodies has to establish its own policies. Very important to note. What the NQF has done is that it allows us to sit in each other's boards. I'm a member of the board of SAQUA, CHE and GC2O, and the CEOs of these bodies are ex officio, by virtue of their positions, also members of my council. And their employer, at some point, they sit in their board and ask questions. They also have a tendency to ask questions. It is not in the spirit of asking each other questions, but it's in the spirit of synergy. What is important is that each of these bodies is independent, because it has got its own board. SAQUA deals with qualifications. Once the DG comes with a new qualification, it could be GCE or GEC or whatever. It comes to Umalusi, we look at it, we quality assure it, and we determine the NQF level of which it is, council approves it, and then we register it with SAQUA. The learners who pass through the system will pass through Umalusi. We issue certificates, and then we upload national. We upload those qualifications to the National Learner Record Database. All of us here, who have studied in South Africa, our qualifications are ultimately in the National Learner Record Database. Be it your matric or your BA, your BSc or whatever. coming through the CHE processes, coming through the Umalusi processes, coming through the KCGO processes. If you punch in my ID number at Sabah, it will come up with all my qualifications obtained from anybody. What's critical here, there's been a debate, and Chairperson, let me come to the debate with the MPF amendment bill. I'm coming to that because I know you're dealing with that bill. And we're going to make our input because we have seen that we have called for submissions. What has been unfortunate is that we are the ones who issue certificates, as we manage, because material certificates are issued by us. But now SAFWA is saying the verification function has to be there only. I say, is that fair? That I issue certificates. And when you verify, we are left out, and it has got an income stream. And it is now SAFWA that benefits out of that income stream. Is that right? It's not right. Morally, it is wrong. And also, with the NLRB data that we submit to SAFWA, it only says you obtained NSC. You obtained the DA. As to the symbol that you got and the subject that you did in that NSC, it is Umalusi that will know. So that if the employer comes and says, he says he's got the NSC to SAFWA, SAFWA will say, yes, he's got an NSC. But did he pass mathematics with a distinction? SAFWA will not be able to give that answer. That answer is at Umalusi. So for SAFWA to want to be the only ones who verify the qualifications, it is wrong. And it is not fair. I putting it in this order, maybe we can use our languages. The benefits are with SAFWA. But we are the ones who are feeding this ship. But they are the ones who reach out the need. I think I clarified it in my language this case. Nku, you maru, scare, let hiba, this happen. Chairperson, I think I've clarified a few issues.
Let us leave the 24 and I want to process the
legislation. Thank you. Can you allow me, Madam Miss, just make one point and then
leave it. Thanks, Chair. The only point I want to make is the fact that on the question that you asked about the question papers, that there's a decline. I just wanted to emphasize the fact that that decline is observed at the submission of the question papers for first moderation. But when all the papers are written, they are approved because we return them back for them to deal with them until they are ready to be written. So there's no paper that is written with those deficiencies that we have identified.
No, thank you, Chair. I'm not complaining. I've got most questions, but I've left with the least allocated time. But kudos to Umalusi. I think they had to do a lot of explanation. I think they owe the Select Committee a workshop, like it has happened with the Portfolio Committee. The only good story is that it might be the last engagement that we are having with you. I was going to say, if it would go according to my authority, I would return all of you for the simple reason, and on a serious note, based on the observation made by Honorable Samka, I always maintain that when we improve, credit also goes to oversight structures, because if you don't keep the heat, the pressure on all of us, you are going to relax. And history has shown that if you don't do what you've been doing, even we don't perform. Chair, just as a small addition to what has been eloquently put forward by Umalusi, I'm always troubled by acronyms in education. There's an avalanche of acronyms, and it bothers me that most of the time when we speak, it's not only Dr. Rakomit, I make the same mistake all the time. The NLR is the National Learner Record Database. NLR.
NLRD.
NLRD, yeah.
NLRD.
Yeah.
National Record Database.
Database. In other words, all qualifications are kept in this database. That's why, you know, the verification has been done with SAQUA, but barring the explanation made by Dr. Ragumetse in respect of the National Senior Certificate. Chair, let me start with the questions that you ask. I start from the bottom. Schools that still obtain 0% pass rate. The South African Schools Act is very clear. The principal, the school governing body, have got to account. And the minister writes to provinces every year to say, give me a report of your accountability session with the schools and the improvement plan, which would constitute the consequence management. In my previous area of responsibility, it would even amount to removing some of the school principals. There was a school when I was in the Northwest in 2005, Honorable Harding will remember, Kononyane, in Yohanyisa area, which got 0%. The consequence management of that led to the suspension of the district chief director, the director for professional services, the responsible circuit managers, and even subject advisors. We even removed the school management team, HODs. We removed the school principals and then brought in new people. The school moved from 0% to 96%. In Free State, when you go there, they do that as well. Gauteng, they do that. They even do it with district directors and other managers and so on. That's part of the consequence management. Declining enrollment in gateway subjects, just to indicate that for some subjects, the decline is proportional to the overall decrease. Is proportional to the overall decrease of the learner enrollment. Because the learner enrollment of 2018 is lower than 2017 and lower than 2016. I think we had the highest in 2016, Mr. Padayaki, if I'm not mistaken. That was the highest. So generally, or in the main, it's proportional. Because you've got fewer learners, they also show in the subjects. But you have a legitimate reason to be worried about something that is out of line or out of kilter, like in accounting, like in economics, like in business studies. We have reason to believe that it's motivated by other factors other than overall enrollment. E.g., accounting has not been performing over years. Now, because parents and learners would want to pass and go to university, they tend to avoid subjects that are presenting difficulties for them, and therefore they move away from them. In our meetings with school principals, yesterday I was in Polokwane, that's why DM said I had to come all the way from Polokwane. We are addressing these things. When we were in Vembe, in Toyando, and we posed the question as to why this unprecedented decrease, the district director confirmed the reasons that I'm giving. He even said the availability of qualified teachers is not even the reason. In fact, what is becoming a challenge is that teachers who are offering these subjects are becoming, in addition, fewer learners and eventually have no learners to teach. And I said to them, if this trend continues, it means our chartered accountants are going to come from neighboring countries and overseas. So we've got to stem it now and stop it now. And that's what we are doing at the moment in our meetings with school principals and say, you can't do this under our watch. We have to do something about it. And then the progress learners. We've done some preliminary investigation, and our preliminary investigation point to the fact that some of the progress learners are manufactured. What do I mean? In simple terms, what principals do, they identify their weaker learners who are not progressed, who just moved on meeting the requirements, and club them together with progress learners. The benefit of that is that progress learners have got an option to modularize, which means they might not write all the 7 subjects. They might be allowed to write 3 subjects based on their performance. And until they present 7 subjects, they do not form part of the calculation that you are making for the overall pass rate. And it works to the advantage of some of the schools. Prega Gavenda, a journalist from Sunday Times, wrote an article about it, that some of the schools, you find that, for argument's sake, they've got 12 learners, and they decide that out of 12 learners, 6 of those learners are deemed to be progress learners, and then all 6 of them modularize. And then the school would appear to have gotten 100% because of that. It's a deviant way of propping up the results, which we are also addressing in these meetings we are attending with the school principals. We are even saying we are changing the inclusive basket to even include progress learners and modularized learners, so that we are able to penalize schools that are hiding these learners, that are grouping them together with learners that do not actually meet the requirement of being called progress learners. That's the work that you are doing. Just my 2 cents worth of contribution to MathsLit. MathsLit, in our view, is for social consumption. In other words, it's a mathematics that you use on a daily basis. You don't stop to use it. When we presented the results to the president on the 31st of December, he actually proposed, Dr. Rakumis, to add to your headaches, that because he remembered that during his schooling, there was something which was called functional mathematics. He said, this mathematics comes across as a mathematics that you use on a daily basis. So it's for daily functionality. Why don't you call it functional mathematics? But it is still mathematics, but it's for functional use. Dr. Rakumis, you will recall, and colleagues, the 2 colleagues from Umalus, the senior managers, that Professor Mabizela, when he was chair of Umalus, he actually proposed that we should consider getting MathsLit to be offered by all learners. Because these attributes that Dr. Rakumis has eloquently put forward, you don't necessarily find in core mathematics. And therefore he was saying, his view is that every learner must do mathematical literacy. And therefore they would benefit from the explanation that Dr. Rakumis has provided to the honorable members. Vocational education, Deputy Minister has explained. But what SONA is saying to us is that we have to massify vocational education. We can take it as vocational and occupational. We are going to require more teachers, and universities have not been producing enough teachers. It's only one university that has a dedicated program in their Faculty of Education for vocational education is Northwest Potchefstroom campus. So we've been meeting with universities to say, here is the task for all of us. We now need you to start focusing on producing more teachers, because you cannot increase the number of schools if we don't have enough teachers who are suitably qualified. We still also depend on teachers coming from neighboring countries. And to be more specific, teachers coming from Zimbabwe are very good in the subjects. They produce even good results. But that is not sustainable. As soon as the situation stabilizes in Zimbabwe, we'll be in trouble. So we are addressing that with universities. Dr. Rakumisi has addressed the issue of the standards of education by IEP and DBE. I won't get into that. Access, why do we get half of the learners in grade 12? It's a favorite question for Professor Jonathan Janssen and others. I wondered as to whether Chair bumped on Professor Jonathan Janssen. Well, there are many factors, but there's one researcher and academic from the University of Johannesburg, UJ, who wrote an interesting article on the 10th of January 2019 responding to this thing. Her name is Nikki Roberts. I can send the article to you. She explains, she says, at the end of grade 9 in the main, learners have got an option to go to TVET colleges. Some could go to other, pursue, you know, their studies to other institutions, including the CETAS, continue with, you know, studies through CETAS or other institutions and so on. And there could be learners who were dropped out in the system. The official statistics that we have, which was conducted by National Dynamic Studies from the Office of the Presidency, the Department of DPME, is that the dropout rate, which was, the study was done in 2010, is between 13% and 15%. These are learners who are completely lost in the system. The other issue, Chair, is that there are more learners who are repeating grades than learners who progress throughout until the, in other words, more learners spend more than 12 years in the system. There's a high repetition rate than dropout rate. And we can, I mean, you can even see from the age analysis which was presented by Mr. Fisahi, that some learners, instead they should be completing at age 18, but many of them complete even beyond age 18. That gives you a sense. Those who complete at 15, it means they started school much younger, and they are even brighter, they are still focused. The research tells us that the older they become in the system, the poorer they perform. In other words, the longer you keep them in the system, the poorer they perform. Such is the nature of human beings. If you keep them much longer in the system, they start thinking about other things other than just education. That's the nature of human beings. So Honorable Kaula, slide 97 about learner population of Gauteng. This is the population of Gauteng. Chair will recall that the population of Gauteng surpassed the population of KZN only in the last census data. But before that, KZN has always been bigger than Gauteng. But the point that he made is also important. It does seem to suggest that people who go to Gauteng are people who choose to leave their families behind. Migrant labor is still alive and well. And I'm sure Parliament can attest to that. Many of you. I see you going home on Friday and coming back on Monday. So, yeah. But also, many of the people who go to Gauteng go there because of economic activity, so they leave their families behind. I must profusely apologize for not having ensured that all of you are invited to the release of the matric results. I will make sure that it doesn't happen again. And then I must say that it could have been motivated by cost containment, but I don't think it's a very good motivation to leave. People have worked so hard to get us to perform, and on the at the moment when the results are released. And I think I must just say that I want to profusely apologize. I'll take care of that. Winter schools of KZN, well, I suspect that the number would have also been prompted by cost containment. Cost containment is biting. It's only provinces like Gauteng which are able to persuade their treasuries to give them more money. Yes. Yeah, from the private sector. Absolutely right, Chair. Absolutely right. The private sector is quite active there. But you see that KZN has been improving. And as Dr. Rakomezi correctly pointed out, there were people who were totally against the camps, Leonard Scott camps. And I think we've gone past that stage now because we've been able to argue the point. For my children, I'm able to get extra tutors. But for the poor, unemployed, people who don't have any income, who provide extra tuition for their children? And government is doing that at the moment. Honorable Harting is gone, but I think I have an obligation to respond to his question. The issue of mother tongue is extremely important. There's a mother tongue project that Dr. Mabuya is busy with in the department. We are looking at even extending mother tongue not only up to grade 3, but to take it up to grade 6, because in many countries it goes up to mother tongue instruction, goes up to grade 6 in many countries. And many of us around this, in fact, if not all of us, went through mother tongue instruction up to the equivalent of grade 6. Yeah. Yeah, not sure whether it was standard 4 or standard 6. Yeah, standard 6. Okay. So we're looking at that. It does have an influence in terms of, learning outcomes. But also remind Honorable Harting that the Pearl study was conducted in 2015, released in 2016. But there's people who are so passionate about this study. Up to 2018, they still refer to it. Even when we improve in one area, they remind us of how bad we performed in this study. And 78% of learners could not read with understanding in grade 4. But they don't read what the study is saying about grade 5. They only stop at grade 4 because it favors them. They don't even ask questions as to how was the sampling done. And for your information, 60% of the sampling was based on rural areas, when 60% of the population is in the urban areas. I leave you with a question mark on that. Okay? Honorable Mampo Sebukwane, the rule is that these questions belong to the committee.
I would make a strong suggestion
to leave them out, you
actually answer in writing.
Okay.
Now that the ones that raise them are no longer in the meeting. Also in light of the fact that you are running extremely late.
Mm. Okay, let me just touch 2 points which were raised by Honorable Ngwenya, because she's here. Now, just to add to Dr. Rakumezi, Honorable Ngwenya, the raw marks for economics and business studies was higher than what Dr. Rakumezi explained, the marks of the last 5 years, the norm. And therefore, the assessment and standards committee could find no reason why we were very fortunate they did not adjust downward, they accepted the lower marks. Yeah. But these two subjects have been underperforming in the previous years. And then the training of markers. Well, we are training markers. A maximum of 3 days is spent on training markers before they actually go full steam on working. But you are looking for something much more sustainable over time, where we will train teachers and conduct the competency assessment for them, and then afford them eligibility to be appointed to mark for a period of about 3 years. Countries like Kenya and others, I think, are doing it. So we are looking at something in that light. Now, I must...
It's more cost-effective to do that, I think.
It would be more cost-effective than what we are doing now. Because it would be sort of once-off training, and the intensity of training in preparations for marking will even be much more reduced. I must also say that the Western Cape would tell you that they administer competency assessment. It's not for all subjects. It's for certain key subjects that are selected. It's for 7 subjects, I'm reminded there. And then, Honorable Samka, I've touched the issue of underperforming schools. I hope it's fine. A criteria for marking was covered by Dr. Rakometsi. The role of oversight, I've appreciated that, and thank you very much. And Honorable Mampuru is not here. But what I can say is that Limpopo is performing better than many provinces. Limpopo is performing better for the last 3 years. It's performing better than Northern Cape, and even better than Western Cape, if we look at sustained improvement trends. African learners who get 60% and above in mathematics, the majority of them come from Limpopo. Limpopo contributes 22% of African learners who get bachelor's. Limpopo in 2018 improved by 3.8%. Mr. Fisari made a mistake. Number one is Eastern Cape, the highest improved province, Honorable Samka. 5.6%, you must give credit to Honorable Makopula, may his soul rest in peace. And then number two is Mpumalanga, 4.2% improvement. Number three is Limpopo, 3.8%. So there is no way that we can say that Limpopo is underperforming. If you look at SACMEC, you look at even PIRLS and so on, Limpopo is really improving. Thank you, Chair.
You know, the department, the leadership of MWA, also, and what would be that they said in your case?
Dr.
Rakumi. Yes. You know, the encourage the manner you are part of committing to save the fund, to account, I think, my right, my best, because all the questions, you know, sometimes let them up and the abana but when you appoint somebody to serve in a particular position, the interviews, they are joking. You know, guys, Jenga Pandin, the Ubuntu, you know, Lamtu, why any nigger is position, what job I know, but you don't even talk of the kid. I see the yellow for some time, like the classroom. Nanyazi ngoba yintoni le nto ufunekayo emntwini ukuza abe kule ndawo kufuneka ekuyo igoli okufuneka umntu eyiachivile ekugqibeleni ukuze abanye abantu basele kule nto ayenzayo. You know, indlela endiziphulaphule ngayo xa ndisenza ipresentation, niyaphulaphule nifaka u-abet nangona niphendule ii-questions. Because the questions then sikwangu agent kuthi so that sikwazi basithathe ezinto documents sikwazi kuzitolika kwabanye abantu, you know, ndifuna ukuthi kule term sihlalo bendinani akwabi mina nibuyileni zawubuya kuba nena server kwezi committees ngaske namagosa niwancedise into okokuba kule ndawo bakuyo ba-improvise more because indlela basebenzise ngayo yenze saphuma nathi ezimemba ke nangona besicinga into yoba singabona abantu benze oversight kubo but ekugqibeleni ngoku sizawukwazi ukuthi basisele makhaya sithi asisenzi oversight kwezaa zikolo zingoomakelwane sithi idepartment ifuna oku kwawuthi ukuze umntwana afane nawe titshala wenze ngohlobo funa ukuthi enkosi baye bandiphatha kakuhle mna andazi kwabanye andithi sihlalo ndikuvalela ngaphandle ezitshepesini but ndiyazazi mna into okokuba andifuni kubuyela ebalameke that's my why ndithi mandinibulele ndithi enkosi sihlalo because indlela abashini ingakumbi ngoku sendihamba ndiphuma ngumnyango noko bandenze umntu ngozakwazi uba ndifike ekhaya ndibengathi ndithisa esifundisise enkosi.
No, Zibongeleni ngempela. No, thank you very much for the presentations and the responses. You always have room for improvement. Yes, we congratulate you for ever improving on your performance as a department and also as a quality assurer, but there is still room for improvement. Nonetheless, we don't disregard the effort that you've put in ensuring that our system of education is amongst those that are up to scratch or up to standard. We are proud of that. And we know that it happened because you put your shoulders on the wheel, all of you. We want to convey our appreciation, DG, also to the Minister of Basic Education, to the Deputy Minister of Education, and to yourself and the entire establishment. You know, you work so well as a team. You work together, you plan together, you execute together. As I was reading through your presentations, I actually saw that Omalus, for instance, was to so many marking centers, I don't know, verification processes, ensuring that the systems are in place for learners to write well, meetings for this standardization, for every other issue, UDG, and so even the picture sitting in the provinces. Provinces will always argue that, oh no, you will always argue that education is a concurrent function. But notwithstanding that, you take your time to actually go to them and ensure that they perform to the expectation. I don't think you are forced to do that, but I think it comes out of the fact that you love your work, your profession, you are dedicated, you want your department to move forward, to improve each day, because there is no national unless there are provinces. There is some total of national. So if the things do not go well at that level, even at the level of district, I heard something like Minister Obanem, my meetings with districts, at that level, from national to district, because you are hands-on. You want to ensure that as a department, as a collective, I want to appreciate your contribution as a collective. That this is one department I've observed that the political leadership as well as the administration and all the entities that are attached to the department work very well together. Which would have projected the kind of leadership that South Africa is looking for. I also observed as a person which over these years, our protests have declined in the department. bese sivula nje sivula ngothisha bethwele amahlahla ekhadi bethabanga eklasini. But this year we have mastered the art of the administration and negotiating with the unions and everybody concerned to ensure that we do not compromise the quality of education for our children. We have really been able to put children at the center of everything. Do convey our gratitude. This could possibly be the last engagement with the department. And we want to say that as the sixth administration comes in, they will look at what we've done and proceed from there. And I want to thank the members, although I'm remaining with only two. the effort they've put also in the oversight. Conducting oversight is not easy. You meet challenges, but you do also meet a good practice in some of the areas that you would like all the other provinces to share. But it's not been an easy thing to do. We did it because it is a constitutional obligation. Nonetheless, we share the glory when we improve. We really do share the glory. We share the credit as a committee, because if you don't conduct oversight, then everybody will sit on their laurels and say, no, they're not coming. Although those, no, they are based in Cape Town. They don't have anything to do with us. We've got our own portfolio committee in the province. But in spite of that, we've been to the province to ensure that we support you. Ma, we have not done well as a select committee. We have to forgive us on that, but Maxel Angel, you are, I'm bound to hate you in one way or another. We are it's injury on duty that is not paid for by me. I just want to say that, you know, we would really apologize for that. It was just a work in progress. We did not intend to offend or denigrate or spite any person. It's not our nature. We are an oversight body that is representing the public, and we do our duty. And in the process, some hatching can occur. We want to say, we bless you, and we want to believe that you'll continue doing your work well even in the sixth administration. Thank you very much. I wanted to say we love you, but people will going to misinterpret what I'm saying.